Joanne Wadsworth has the status of a New York Times and USA Today best-selling author. She writes all manner of romance novels, often featuring husky Highlanders, but she has all sorts of heroes and heroines. And she's a New Zealander. Good morning, Joanne.
Hi, how are you, Jim?
I'm very well. And I wonder how you are. Have you seen your sales start to soar? Forbes magazine says during the GFC a decade ago, romance novels were the only book category that saw sales increases.
I have seen my sales rise, and so many other authors across the world have also reported the same during the lockdown period.
So you're in touch with other romance writers, or at least you know who's who and what they're doing and saying and...
Yeah, there are some fantastic Facebook groups dedicated for authors across, it doesn't matter what genre you're in, and a lot of them are there to help sort of independent authors who are just starting out now, wanting to write and sort of free themselves maybe from the traditional publishing route.
Why do people love books like yours?
I have time travel involved within them, the Scottish clans, Highlanders. I write Regency. I kind of across the board through medieval, ancient times and the Regency era. A lot of readers are really interested in those historical eras.
We snobbily imagine maybe that they're read by people who don't get out of the house much or are hopeless fantasists and unfulfilled lives and so on, you know, the cliche. But we might be surprised. Do you know who your readers are?
A lot of them make contact with me on social media. I have a newsletter that goes out, and there's over 25,000 subscribers. And when I send a newsletter out, I get a lot of emails coming back in from my readers. And, you know, they're varied across different ages, different locations. Different books will connect with them in a different way, depending on sort of where they are in their lives.
Okay, so you've got doctors and lawyers, as well as, you know, people who drive trucks and work in factories. You've got all sorts, men and women.
Yes. A recent survey was done by Romance Writers in America, and 80% are female and around 20% are male. Yeah.
You fell in love with romance, Joanne, didn't you, in your teens when you tucked yourself into bed at night?
Yes, and teenagers today read a lot of young adult teen romance, the same as I did during my teenage years. Books like the Twilight series, Hunger Games, the Divergent series, and so many others like that are actually classified within a subgenre of romance, since there's like a love story intertwined within the plot. Of course, they're sweet and clean, which makes them perfect for teenagers to read.
How did that infatuation, though, with what you read, because it's all changed since you were a girl reading these, how did that infatuation survive the realities of life and relationships and socks left on the floor and loose not flushed? And
so I didn't start writing until my children were sort of, you know, the youngest was four. I followed a career into financial accounting. And it was when I had my children and they were, I had four and they're quite close in age. So when the youngest was four, that's when I was like, I've got a window of opportunity here. I need to see if I can follow my dream of being a full-time writer.
Before all that, it was your mother who fostered a love of reading, I think, and of the romance genre. So from when you were 11 to when you were 16, she made sure you had a copy of each new release of the Sweet Valley High books, I'm told.
Yes. The Sweet Valley High series is high school-aged adventure romance. It's books written about the Wakefield twins, Jessica and Elizabeth Wakefield. And a lot of girls my age were reading them.
You're in the Bay of Plenty. You're a mother of four. You're a financial controller. So you're just in a suburb somewhere. I think there's a big-selling Angels and Vampires novelist living in Avondale, not far from me. You're just in a suburb somewhere. Do your neighbours know?
No, they don't. Well, I don't think so. I live rurally in Te Puke, so I'm on an avocado orchard.
Oh, okay.
I've got kiwi fruit all around me. So my nearest neighbour's quite a distance away. The ones I talk to quite a lot, they know what I do, yeah.
And your husband, obvious question, also a romantic. What does he think of it all?
Yes, he is a romantic in his own way. I think there's nothing more romantic than, you know, when a guy will cook dinner for you or wash your car. He doesn't read a lot of novels. He's more into sort of building journals or newspapers. I think he's claimed to have read at least one of my books, but I'm not sure he actually has.
You see, they're the men women tend to end up with, but in your books, there is a fascination, obviously, that cannot be defeated, you know, deflated, mm-hmm. with strong, often quite violent as well, men. That's interesting that that persists in this age, this era.
Yes, you know, the Highlanders, the brutal times back then, the clans, that whole sort of family-type environment within the clans, and the men were the warriors. They had to, you know, fight off the Vikings and the Danes who were coming, and it was fight or die sort of thing.
Yeah, but interesting, there's this fascination, persisting fascination with that kind of world. And people giving ticks of approval to it buying your books.
Yeah, people love, because historical romance authors like myself, we do a lot of research before we even write a novel. Like recently I wrote a Regency book within Portugal during the Napoleonic War. The Portuguese lines that were put in place by the Duke of Wellington to defend Lisbon from attack. And a lot of my readers were like, I had no idea those lines had been created. And I had written the whole story around that sort of 1810, 1811 period of time when Napoleon was coming down into Lisbon and trying to take over all of Portugal. Those lines of redoubts and trenches, some of them still exist. We're talking like 30 kilometres long. They're really long to defend Lisbon against France's attack. I just love bringing that kind of rich history to a reader. Sometimes I feel like I'm a walking encyclopedia.
I bet you are.
I just spout off, you know, statistics like anything. My kids think they drive them silly sometimes. They get a bit annoyed with it.
Actually, your husband, I'm not about to delve into his life, but he sounds fairly handy. I mean, you write about pirate princes with cutlasses and husky Highlanders with claymores and so on, but he sounds like, you know, he could have survived in that era.
I think he would have, for sure, because he's a builder. He's quite strong, you know. I think he could wield a sword for sure, yeah. And row now, some of those huge Berlins. My sons would be right there. They would be in the Berlins with him, and one would probably be fishing off the side, letting everyone else do the hard work. Probably another would be trying to surf alongside it, yeah.
The Berlins?
Yes, Berlins. That was the name of the boats that were constructed in the, there I go, you see, spouting the history, and statistics. So in the 1100s through to about the 1600s, 1700s, Berlins were the name of the vessel or the boat, which you would put like 30 men on with oars and they would row.
Dave tells me you've been known to race to your office like a greyhound the second the children are out the door, because I'm wondering, you're so prolific, you've got a job, you've got children, you're writing all these books.
Yes, I have to get in here first thing in the morning into my office. I've got a word count to get done. I aim for 3,000 words a day, so I try to hit around 500 an hour. So I get that done sort of between 8 and 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and then I can relax and do all the other work that's involved in being an author.
Yeah. So you write different series of books, that's the thing, and in the straight romance category, the Earl's Secret Bride, the Duke's Bride, the Prince's Bride. You gave Meghan Markle a copy of the Prince's Bride.
I did. It was so exciting for me. My daughter and I, we headed down to Rotorua, and the lines there were massive. I mean, the chance of me being able to talk to her and say hello and give her my book would just seemed like one in a million. But I was standing there, and when her and Prince Harry hopped out of the car, I was at the end of the road. But they, when they came in, they came to the end instead of the front of the queue. So I was just very fortunate. I got to say hello to her and hand her my book. And she looked at it and she went, oh, the Princess Bride. Oh, that's me too. So that was really awesome, yeah.
I haven't seen her review of it yet.
Oh, I don't know where that book would have ended up. I did sign it and made sure she had it. But she got a lot of gifts that day.
And you've got a photo of it that I saw with her with the book in her hand.
Yes.
You've got your straight, you know, for reference, I'm just using these phrases for reference because I know they're not really completely applicable, but you've got your straight Mills and Boone, if you like, romance sagas.
Okay, yep, category romances, yep.
Right, okay. You've got the, forgive the comparison, Shades of Grey type books, the Billionaire Bodyguard series.
Shades of Grey, that's more erotica. I don't write erotica, but I do write to a high steamy, sexy level, yes.
Right, okay. Billionaire Bodyguard. You've got the Royal Romances, and then you've got your altered reality, or whatever the right phrase is, genre, where romance and daring do meet strange powers, like a Highlander falls in love with a mermaid, or you travel back in time to meet a Highlander.
Yes, I love throwing, you know, a lady from our century way back into the past. That just, the possibilities are endless. Or I send a current male back into the past.
What was the best Highlander period, given that a lot of the good ones never made it past the Battle of Culloden? Is there kind of peak Highlander?
The peak Highlander period would be during the late 1500s and the early 10 years of the 1600s, when we had a king who ruled both Scotland and England. The clans were trying to still be Scottish, but also they were coming under the English umbrella. There was a lot of fighting in between the clans. You know, the clans were still very much wearing their plaids, you know, building their fortresses.
Yeah, okay. What do you believe is the greatest romantic era of all time? I mean, if we gave you good food and medicine and flush toilets, when would you most like to have lived in the past?
So the Regency period through to the late Victorian period. And the reason for that is it was such an artistic period. There was females were getting to be a little bit more heard. Artwork was more on display. There was more culture going on, more plays, more theatre. The roads were a bit better. And I loved that era because there is sort of sophistication within it, as well as sort of still a bit of the old classic times.
Okay. And sometimes your stories take place in New Zealand, like in Protector, for example, where all of the locations were actual places. Do you reckon in a smaller way than Lord of the Rings, admittedly, it might want to make people travel here? Have you heard any of that from your readers?
I would love that series. It's a young adult fantasy. There's an alternate universe, so they have magical abilities, so it's paranormal, but also the alternate universe they go to is historical in nature, with kings and queens and wars and those kind of things. Because I really want to keep growing that series. It's 6 books strong, and there's so many more books in that series I could write. We're New Zealanders, we dream big sometimes.
Yeah, you dream big. Well, you certainly do, and you write fast. Joanne Wadsworth is with us, the New York Times and USA Today best-selling author of Romance. And you must like writing. I know you have to toil away. You've got a word count. You've got to meet audience expectations, reader expectations. But you must quite enjoy it.
I love it. It is the best job ever. I often say to people, if you love reading a book, writing a book is 10 times better than that, because you get to control the whole storyline, the characters, where they go, what they do. It's all up to you. And even better than that, you've left behind a book that your children can read, or your grandchildren could read, or your great-grandchildren. And so hopefully I've left my mark on the world. My husband builds houses, and I often look at him and think, well, you've left your mark on the world, and that's what I wanted to do as well. It was quite important to me.
Yeah, I understand. You have to be careful of your language. I don't mean bodice-ripping language, but everyday phrases that you use, presumably. I notice one of your pirate heroes is climbing a cliff and nabbing handholds. And I'm assuming nabbing is a word that Americans mightn't use or Canadians mightn't use. Do you research that aspect of your writing?
So I try to make sure that any words I use are relevant to that existed in that time. And there's a great dictionary online where you can type in the word, like the word nab, which is like grab or grasp, and it will tell you when that word first existed and came into being. So everything I write, if there's a word that sounds too like modern, I double check and check when it first existed. Yeah, that's actually quite an important part, because readers are very clever. They pick up on words that shouldn't have existed at that time.
New York Times best-selling author categories, how do they work? I mean, obviously you're not outselling Eat, Pray, Love, but you're doing well.
That was back in February 2017. I had joined together with some author friends, well-known author friends, and we put together a science fiction fantasy collection. And we thought to ourselves, you know, we're going to see if we can make a list with this. And it far exceeded our expectations. At the time, the New York Times weren't including any paperback sales. they took the list down to just, there was paperback separated from ebook, and then they combined the ebook and the paperback into one list, and we were like, oh, okay, our chances just diminished. But we had, I think, close to 27,000 pre-orders. So that put us at a point where we were like, we might be able to do this. And we just worked together as a team. And yeah, after opening week, we waited anxiously to hear back from New York Times and USA Today if it had made the list, and it blew us away. It hit number 5. So we achieved something that has happened since to other authors, but I feel like we kind of did lead the way a little bit by hitting that list with a collection. It was awesome.
Yeah, no, well done. But with writing your own books, mm-hmm. are you getting rich? I presume you have to write a lot of them. How do you sell them? Yes. Can you give us the nuts and bolts?
Well, one book won't make you much money, neither will two or three. You've just got to, if you decide to make it your career, you've got to keep on going. You don't really focus so much on the sales to start with. You just focus on writing the stories. And I've got 44 published works now. And, of course, when you have that many and they're all earning money each week in royalties coming from all over the world and in multiple versions, paperback, audiobook, and ebook, that adds up to be a, you know, a really nice full-time wage. It's what kind of a lot of authors want to get. They want to get to that point, but it does take a lot of time. I mean, I've been at this since 2009, so it's been a long time, 11 years. But, you know, if that's your dream to write, start writing, get it down, get those words down, and then just do everything you can to launch yourself.
Okay. And I think you're quite a good self-publicist, but basically all that's done online. You have to do all that online, really, don't you?
Yes. Yes, my first few books were all contracted traditionally through a publishing house, and once I received the rights back to those, I moved immediately into being an indie author, which is an independent author who manages their own career and treats their writing like a business. So I, you know, employ my own editors and cover artists and narrators for the audiobook. So I pay 100% of the cost, but I also get to keep 100% of the royalties, and that's what an author really does try and aspire to. If you're wanting to get a really good income from it, being an indie is the best option.
Okay. And even though the books are far cheaper than paperbacks, the dollars and cents just eventually add up.
Yes. With publishing, only about 85 to 88% of books sold are ebooks, and say 8 to 10% are audiobooks. For me, and 1% would be paperback. So my drive and my focus is ebooks.
Right, that's the romance genre that's you're describing.
Pretty much, yes, definitely the romance, but as I'm in a group with loads of authors who have all sorts of different genres, it would be very similar. The statistics are very, very similar. Most sell predominantly ebooks,
okay,
and audiobooks.
Yeah.
Paperbacks are lower, way lower on the list, like 1%. They're pretty small. You think about the shelf space in a brick-and-mortar store, there's not a lot of space in there, and there are a million books being written every year and being published. You can't fit that many books on a shelf in a store.
It's amazing that you can cut through, as you describe, in an era when there are a million books coming out a year. I mean, we see it in the office, all these lovely books coming in, hard copies and presumably not read by many people. It's a bit heartbreaking to see them sometimes.
It is, it is hard to carve a path. And a lot of new authors will write a book and say, oh, I sold like 10 copies. And it's like, oh, please don't be downtrodden about that. You sold 10 copies, you did great, now write the next book. Because if I had done that to start with back in 2009, my sales back there were pitiful. And if I had taken that train of thought, it's not worth it, you know, like what's a few dollars every month coming in? That's just silly. Why would you work for pennies? But now, looking back, it took 3 or 4 years to really get going. But once it did, it's a magical career. I can do this for the rest of my life. I probably will be 80 and still writing, albeit slower. But it can be the kind of career that can just be really soul satisfying.
It is such an interesting journey for you, and congratulations on your determination. I imagine that of all the qualities you have, determination's been the most important one.
It is, and knowing it's going to take a while, but you can just chip away at it, you know, one day at a time, and eventually all of a sudden you're there and you're like, oh, okay, now I want to try and get even further up ahead. there's never sort of an end in sight. There's always, I've just got to keep going and going and going.
Yeah, what you do.
Yes.
Even though there's no room for a lot of contemporary urban men like me in your Highlander world.
Well, you know, I can write one.
Yeah, would you mind?
Not at all. I sometimes use real-life people as characters in my books. I'll take a grain of that person and write them in there, yeah.
Okay, let's just turn them into a scribe of the time.
Oh, yes, I could totally do that. And once I even had a gentleman who was, quite old, and he's passed away now, but he loved to read romance, and he said to me, do you think you can include me in your book? And I'm like, sure. And I just imagined him with suspenders. His name was, his last name was Saunder. So I called the boy Saunder. Instead of being 80, which he was, I put him in there as like a 10-year-old boy. And he thought it was fantastic.
What was he wearing suspenders for?
Oh, because it was back in the time when they might wear... Sometimes they called them suspenders and sometimes they called them...
Hose of some sort.
Yeah. And, it was that was the era in which I was writing. Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
Well, what a fertile mind. And well done on your success, Joanne. And very nice to talk with you this morning. So all your mates online are going to be encouraged because they can sense a revival coming, do you reckon?
More than ever, indie authors are taking over the world of publishing. They really are. It's great to see because they're taking control of their own career, and that's awesome. And there's no longer sort of that really firm gatekeeper in the place of withholding an author or a writer from getting a published book out, because the gatekeepers, those publishers, they've kind of fallen away, and the aggregators or the distributors of books, who are the likes of Apple and Google Play and Kobo and Amazon, they now allow publishing platforms where anyone can publish a book. And I think that's fantastic because we're getting so many more books and fantastic books that wouldn't have made it onto the market otherwise.
Excellent. Lovely to talk to you. All power to your pen.
Oh, thank you very much.